So the big question is this. With over 10,000 different species of mushrooms, how do people that want to benefit from their various medicinal properties accurately identify them in the wild, grow them at home, or make them taste delicious without having to reach confusing medical reports and possibly eating a poisonous look-alike by mistake? That's the question, and this podcast will give you the answer. My name is Oliver Carlin, and welcome to Curated Mushroom.
Hey, how's it going out there, my mushroom lovers? And welcome to season 3 of the Curated Mushrooms podcast. This is episode 4, and I am your host, Oliver Carlin. And this episode is going to be all about incubating your mushrooms and harvesting your mushrooms. And maybe even drying how to use them if we have time at the end. Up to this point, you know, throughout this last few episodes, we've been kind of building up to this, right? Because in the first episode, we talked about why you'd even want to grow mushrooms at home. Like, who is this for? The second episode, we talked about the most important step in the entire growing process, which is about getting the actual good supplies that you know are going to work from the right place and what to look for, right? So you don't end up with contamination and stalled bags that don't work or whatever. In the next episode, we talked about the most important step after you've gotten the right supplies is to test your grow bag and test your spore syringe, okay? Now, if you're getting a grow bag, like I said, from us, you don't really have to worry about that too much because we've already tested that. But no matter what, you want to test that spore syringe using the exact way that we talked about in the last episode. And that really is honestly going to be one of the most important steps that you do to ensure your success in this. The one thing I hate more than anything is when people get to this stage of incubation or harvesting and they just start to realize that the bag's stalled out or contaminated. That is the most disappointing moment. I hate that. It's happened to me, and I hate seeing it when it happens to other people, right? And so for that, it's like, that's why we spent so much time, and we talked about this in the other episodes, on the importance of the grow bag and the spore syringe, and then testing it the exact way that we did in the previous episode. So if you've done all that right, you've tested it to agar, you've injected your grow bag, then pretty much you're here. You're here at this point, and this podcast can be watched that way, you know, if you feel, you know, watch each episode as you get to that point in the growing process, right? Because let's face it, it's going to take you a week or so to get your supplies. So watch the first, you know, watch the part episode where we tell you how to get your supplies. Then the next, you get your supplies, then you see the next episode, which is about how to test your spore syringe and how to inject it into that grow bag, right? And so now that you've gotten through that step. After that, that can take another few weeks, right? Even sometimes longer, sometimes shorter, to get to the finish line, right? And so you may need to pause this video and rewatch it when you get to that point, which is perfectly fine. But at the same time, it's great to listen to it straight through ahead of time so you understand the whole process, right? But just know that you can go back to this and rewatch it when you get to that point. And that's kind of the way I designed it. So that being said, so we're at a point now where we're in the incubation phase. What's incubation? Incubation is like the same way we incubate eggs. Like, so let's say a chicken lays an egg. Or, you know, we'll finish that one. A chicken lays an egg, and then the egg's on the ground, and then the chicken has to sit on it, right? Why does the chicken sit on the egg? To incubate it, right? To make it warm. So just think of incubating as making it warm. Now, what temperature is warm? That can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people, right? Because you have cold weather strains and warm weather strains. If you're growing the happy mushroom, the manure-loving happy mushrooms that most people want, that's in John Hopkins universities and all these things. I mean, if you're growing this life-changing mushroom, most of the time, it's going to be a tropical mushroom. It's a mushroom that enjoys tropical weather. Kind of like me. I keep my house about the same temperature as mushrooms like, maybe because I like taking mushrooms and I'm becoming a mushroom and I like the same temperature as mushrooms. But I'll tell you this, there is an interesting thing about mushrooms. And I was on a podcast with Alan Belcher, who is the current heavyweight champion of the world. You can see that in season two of the podcast. He's the current heavyweight champion of the world in bare knuckle boxing and bare knuckle MMA. And he accredits mushrooms to literally making him the best fighter in the world. So yeah, incubation, right? When you get to really at this stage, we're at the incubation stage. And what I want you to think about incubation is kind of like what when a chicken lays an egg, right? A chicken lays an egg and then the chicken has to go sit on the egg and they create this warm environment. That's called incubation, right? Well, that's the same type of thing we're trying to create, the same type of environment we're trying to create with the grow bags. And yes, different mushrooms can require different temperature ranges and stuff like that for incubation. But the good news is if you're wanting to grow a happy mushroom, manure-loving happy mushroom that most people want those amazing life-changing benefits from, most of the time you're going to be in the range of 79 degrees. It's kind of the ideal incubation range for the mushroom. So after you've injected that bag, you want to try to keep it as close to 79 as possible. And you want to keep it in the dark. And you want that air filter patch not like tucked under the bag, but kind of open so that it can breathe a little bit. Because at this point, as the mushroom mycelium starts to grow, it's going to start breathing, right? It's going to start breathing oxygen and exhaling carbon monoxide the same way that we do, okay? And that gas exchange will happen through that air filter patch, okay? So keep that just exposed. Again, you just injected it. You can't even see the mycelium. It's microscopic probably right now. So like, don't worry about a lot of oxygen right now. They're not very big. They're not breathing a lot. But if that whole block turns white, now it's breathing a little bit more oxygen, right? So I just need you to be aware of that. Now, how are you going to keep it 79 degrees? This becomes one of the biggest challenges after injecting the grow bag is, well, how do I keep it 79, 80 degrees? How lenient is that number? Can I go a little colder, a little hotter? So let's talk about that for a second. So anything above 80 degrees, 80 is fine. But if you start going to 81, 82, 83, it starts to get into a breeding ground. The hotter you get, the more of a breeding ground it is for other types of molds and bacteria to thrive. Right? So we don't like that. We don't want extra competition, even though the mushrooms do like it at 83 degrees, so do too many other things. So we found that if we keep it at around 79 degrees, that is a sweet spot. Now, I've had it as low as 75 degrees and it's still colonized, but the colder you get, like if you get down to 74, 73, 72, you're going to find your bag stops growing. It gets to a point where it's too cold. And when it's too cold, that's when people get stalled bags, mushrooms that just never grow, bags that never do anything. A lot of these problems can be avoided if you incubate at the right temperature. Okay? So remember that. It's very important at this stage. And they like it dark. Think of them as like introverts. They don't like people. They don't want you to bother them. They don't even want you to like check on them. If you can go a few days without checking on them, they love that. But don't check them more than once a day either, because it creates what we call fluctuations in temperature, right? Every time you open it, the temperature drops, right? And they don't like that, not in the incubation stage. They don't like the temperature to change. Because think about this, right? If they were in nature, and the easiest way to remember these things is just to put yourself in the shoes of the mushroom, okay? Just pretend like you are a mushroom. Now, if I'm a manure-loving mushroom, then I would be growing pretty much out of the ground, maybe a manure patty, but either way, it's kind of like the ground, right? And so if I'm growing out of the ground, under the ground, I don't know if you know this, but it's actually colder above the ground than it is in the ground. That's why things freeze above the ground, but not under the ground. But also in the ground, the temperature doesn't fluctuate as much, very little. So it wouldn't have these huge fluctuations, and that can actually stress it out and cause it to not want to do as good. Keeping that temperature is really your only goal. If you find a way to do that, really there's no right or wrong way to do it either. We do sell incubation chambers in the shop, Cure to Mushroom shop, on our website. We call them the spawn box. And if you don't know what spawn is, anytime you have oats that you inject with spores and it grows white mycelium, that is called spawn now. Until it grows mushrooms, it's called spawn, because spawn can grow mushrooms. So we call it a spawn box because really you're creating spawn in that box until it fruits. So it's a spawn box, right? Well, this like the device that we made, it regulates the temperature with a heating element inside of the box, and you set the temperature to 79, you put your bag inside, close it up, and it maintains the temperature for you. Now, that box is not ventilated because it does require heat to keep it, right? So I do recommend opening the box once a day just to allow fresh air in, because it's hard to allow fresh air and heat a box, right? So as long as you open it, if you don't open it once a day, it's not a big deal, especially in the early stages. You probably go a week or so without opening that box and it's fine. But once it gets fully white, I would open it once a day just to make sure. But that's the incubation stage, right? So how do you do if you don't have a spawn box? Well, back in the day, what I used to do was I dedicated a closet in my house that no one was using except for like storage. I cleared it out. I put a little space heater that I got on Amazon for like $25. And that space heater would regulate temperature to like 70, whatever I set it to. So I set it to like 79, and I put it, that space heater, inside of the closet, and I closed the closet door. And then I put the bag that I injected into a cardboard box that has a space around it. You know what I mean? A little bit of space around it let me finish. So I'd take this box, put the bag in there. Now don't air seal the bag, like close the top with a little piece of scotch tape, but don't like seal it. And then I put that box on the top shelf of my closet, because remember, heat rises and the space heater is on the ground. So I'd put that box above the space heater on the closet, and the heater would be on the ground, right? And the heater I used did have a safety mechanism built into it. So if it like tips over, it turns off. So that was really cool. And then that would keep it warm enough so that I could incubate my bags. And that's a relatively cheap option. The only downside is you lose a closet. But what I ended up doing too is, because I also, when we move past incubation to fruiting and harvesting, the temperature for fruiting drops a little bit, sometimes to like 75. So what I would do, because I was utilizing that closet as my incubation room and my fruiting room, because the rest of my house was too cold to even fruit, right? So I'd have that closet at 79. I'd put the other, if I was fruiting, I'd put the bag on the other side of the closet because it'd be cooler over there, right? And then I'd put artificial light. So if you have anywhere between 5,500 to 6,500 Kelvin is the range for daylight. So we get that question a lot. Do they need light? No, they're not plants. They don't need light. I'm kind of mixing things together. So let me stop. So let's go back. So the incubation stage. Incubation stage, we do not put light or open that bag yet in the incubation stage. I was talking about fruiting a second ago. I'm gonna step away from that and come back to that in a second, okay? But just know, in the incubation stage, we are not putting it in light and opening that bag yet. In the incubation stage, we're just waiting for that mycelium and the spores to start to turn it white, because that's what color mycelium is white. And once we see this white growth, once it's about the size of a baseball in the oats, because remember, we injected into the oats, not the CBG layer. But once I see about a circle about the size of a baseball white, I'm going to mix those oats together. So I want you to extend your bag the long ways, cut it in half with your hand, like push it apart, so that the CBGA is on one side, the oats are on one side. And now mix those oats together on one side. Once they're mixed together, turn the bag right side up again and pack it back down. So now the oats are still above the CBG. The CBG didn't get touched, but the oats are mixed together now, right? And then we kind of push it back down. And now we wait for those oats to turn fully white. So remember, we had a baseball-sized white circle. We mixed the oats only, and now we're waiting for the oats to turn fully white. Normally, after I mix the oats by themselves, it normally takes about, I don't know, a couple days, a few days, before all the oats are fully white. So it's going to start happening really fast now. And once it's fully white, I'm going to mix it one more time. This time, I'm going to mix my fully white oat layer with the bottom CBG layer in the bag. Just mix it all together now really well. Just take some time, really use the whole bag, mix it all together. And now this is very important. So I want you to listen to this next part. After the bag is fully mixed, you're going to pack it back down into the original shape of that the bag came to you. And you're going to make the top of it kind of level. You're going to put both your hands on it. You're going to apply about 30% of your body weight pressure to the top of that bag. Because what you're doing is, one, you're trying to compress it a little bit so that there's no air pockets. We don't want any air pockets on the side of the bag or the bottom of the bag. At the same time, we don't want to over squish it. We don't want to squish it so tight that it can't breathe, right? But given about 30 pounds of pressure, enough so that the bag fills in and there's no air pockets around the side of the bag. And then make sure the top of it is nice and level and flat with your hand. And the reason for that is because we're going to be fruiting out the top of that block inside of that bag. So we want the mushrooms to know, hey, this top part is where we're going to grow. And the way we tell them that is by the part of the bag that has oxygen. If there's gaps on the side of the bag because you didn't push it down enough, there's an air pocket, you're going to have side pins. There's nothing more frustrating than a bag that's got side pins, because you're going to be sitting there like, can I save it? You're watching the mushroom literally die and you're wasting it. Don't worry. If that happens to you, it's okay. Okay. It's happened to me. It happens to everyone, but we're trying to avoid that. And the way we avoid that is, like I said, no air pockets on the side, and don't over squish it though. Okay. So once you have that, now you put it back into your incubation room for another few days. Within a week, that thing is going to be fully white and soaring. Okay. And it's going to be almost ready for the next stage, which is the fruiting and harvesting stage, which is the most exciting part, because all this buildup for the past 30 days or so is like, you want these mushrooms now. You've literally watched these things from creation to fruition. They've literally spent their entire existence growing for you to give life. You help them to have life so that they can give new life to you. Right? It's really a personal experience. And so it's kind of cool. And during this stage, you can talk to it. You know, you can play some mellow music for it. It has, studies have shown that they do respond. They are aware. They are listening. They're way smarter than we perceive them to be. Okay? So take care of them. Treat them well during this step, because they are alive and they do know. Okay? And they'll take care of you here in a little bit. Okay? So it's kind of a relationship. You're going to develop a lot of patience, which is part of the healing. So this whole process you're going to find is going to be a healing journey for you as you start this new chapter in your life. So it's really exciting. So let's just say that the block's fully white and it's time to come out of the spawn box and it's ready for fruiting. So now when we're in the fruiting stage, this is when we put it into light, which I was talking about earlier. So this is when it gets 12 hours of light, 12 hours of darkness. Does that sound familiar? Kind of like the sun schedule in the sky? Yes. Well, you're right. It is familiar because that's what we're mimicking. Mushrooms in nature would have the sun. And here's the thing. Do they need sunlight to actually grow? No. We've grown mushrooms in the dark. Okay? They do not need sunlight. They're not like plants where they rely on like vitamin D or something from the sun to produce. Like, they don't need anything from the sun. The sun is just literally a pinning trigger, because it has shown that when the light hits that mushroom, it tells the mushroom, because remember, they're aware, oh shit. So think about it. If I'm a mushroom and I'm in the ground and I grow out of the ground, what's the first thing I'm going to see? The sun, right? The sun, the light. And what else? I'm going to get hit with a lot of fresh air, because under the ground, there's very little air. As soon as I pop my head up, now I'm overloaded with fresh air. So we're gonna simulate that same environment for the mushroom in the bag, okay? So it's fully white. And normally before I move officially to the fruiting stage, I like to wait until I start to see a pin. A pin is a little baby mushroom. You'll start to see like little white knots forming. And then all of a sudden you'll see this little brown tip, and it'll look like a tiniest baby mushroom. And those are called pens. Okay. As soon as I start to see pens, that's the go time. Like sometimes I move to fruiting before I see pens, but very rarely. Like normally, if you do it right, you're going to see pens. As soon as it's fully white, if you follow everything I said, once it's fully white, you're going to start seeing pens. That thing's going to be ready to fruit. If it doesn't show pens right away, you can wait a couple weeks for it to decide, or you can try to move it to fruiting without pens and follow these same conditions. Just different things. But just keep in mind that mushrooms, sometimes they may not fruit on the exact schedule. Remember, this is nature. These are living being things, right? They might change their mind. They're kind of interesting like that. Some mushrooms I've grown, they just never fruited. It's really weird, especially if you're growing from spores. If you got LC, not so much of an issue. We talked about that in a previous episode. Okay, so if we got a white block and I see pens, I'm going to fruiting, baby. 12 hours light, don't put it in direct sunlight. Direct sunlight will kill it. Okay, indirect, meaning it can be in a room where the window's open. That's enough light. If you want to use artificial light like I did in my closet, because I was duplicating my incubation room and my fruiting room in the same closet. That's why I was talking about both at that time. But in the incubation room, I had these little LED strips of artificial lighting that was in the 5,500 to 6,500 Kelvin range, which is sunlight range, which is the blue color of the spectrum. And that's what they like. And that's a good pinning trigger. So I'd have that on a cycle timer for 12 hours, 12 hours off. It cost me like $30 on Amazon or something like that. So those are your options. If you're using our spawn box and your house is colder than 75, one thing people have done with our spawn boxes, our incubation chambers, is they'd remove the lid, keep the box on 79, remove the lid so it gets fresh air, and just use the spawn box to heat the area around the bag. That's one way also to try to maintain a warmer temperature for fruiting. Now, once you've decided, okay, I'm in fruiting, I'm exposing it to light, the way we get more air, this is important, we cut the top of the bag off. That's how we simulate. Do you need to cut the top of the bag off? I've grown mushrooms without doing it, and it grew really big in the bag without it. So technically, no, but if you want a good flush, a good growth of mushrooms, and you want them to grow fast and you know, everything work really good, cut the top of the bag off. You're gonna grab the sides of the bag, pull it apart and open it back and forth, you know, several times, and breathing air into that. Do it for like a minute. Get some good fresh air in there. Then take a little fine mister spray bottle and you're gonna mist the edges of the bag inside of it. Don't actually mist the block. The block has all the water it needs. It doesn't need water at this stage. The only reason we mist the bag is to create a humid air environment because they like 80 to 90% humidity, just like a tropical environment, okay? So if you see condensation on the walls of the bag, you don't need to water it. But if you don't see, one thing I do, if I don't see condensation, one, I make sure it's warm enough, because if it's too cold, you won't see condensation. So make sure you're warm enough, 75, and you can be a little warmer than that too. I'd rather you be 79 in fruiting than 70. Too cold won't help you as much. But normally 75 is the sweet spot. They like that drop in temperature from 79, just like in nature, right? If they pop their head out from the ground, it's immediately going to be colder than in the ground, right? So that little drop in temperature is a pinning trigger. Okay, so all these pinning triggers and the mix of the CBG and everything we did is going to have this huge growth of mushrooms that you're going to love and you're going to have. And it's going to be time to go to the next step, which is more flushes. So one bag, the last bag I did got 7 new growths. We call those flushes. So after you harvest, so when you do harvest, you try to reach, and when do you harvest? Moving back a little bit, when you harvest the mushroom, if it's a mushroom that has a veil, like most happy mushrooms have this thin membrane underneath protecting the gills, as soon as that layer breaks and the gills are exposed, you can harvest anytime after that. Most people like to wait until the cap is perfectly flat or like an upside down umbrella. Just know that it will drop spores. There'll be black dust everywhere. And that doesn't affect potency. That doesn't bother anything. It just looks dirty. So if you don't want it to be dirty, you can always harvest before the spores drop, right after the veil breaks. But most people like to get the most bang for their buck, so they let them keep growing until they stop growing. Either way, there's no wrong answer. It's up to you. But once you have that, and they're fully grown, you're going to reach your hand into the bag, try to get as close to the substrate as possible with your fingers, grab at the base of the mushroom, you're going to twist a little bit and pull out. Try not to rip a big chunk of that block out with the mushroom, because that block can get 7 more growths. We got to keep it safe, protect that block. And so once we harvest all the mushrooms out of that block, we're going to soak the block. Take a couple of tap water if you're on city water. If you're on well water, do distilled water. Dump a cup of water in that block. Let it soak for an hour or two. It's going to re-soak up all that water, because you have to know mushrooms are 90% water, okay? So when they dry out, they'll be 10% of that size. They need a lot of water. So when you soak that block, they soak up all that water. And a lot of the times, the second growth of mushrooms is bigger than the first growth. So these are cool tricks you can do. We have a book that we have on our website that has all these checklists. So if you want something like that, you can check us out at curedandmushrooms.com for that. But really, after this next phase is really drying the mushrooms. Normally what I do, I have a book on the top 3 ways to make them cracker dry, but I really use one way. You don't want to use heat. You don't want to use light, because the reality is those can affect potency. So the way I do it, honestly, I'll harvest them out of the bag. I'll separate them individually about 1 inch away from each other on a flat paper towel. Lay them all out. I get a fan. I use what I call the fan dry method. And I blow that fan on low, just over the top of the mushrooms for like 24 to 48 hours. And they'll be pretty much cracker dry. After that, I take out the dry mushrooms that are pretty much cracker dry. I put them in a mason jar or a Ziploc bag with a desiccant pack. From Amazon, you get a pack of them from Amazon. You drop a desiccant pack in there. That'll suck out any remaining moisture and keep them dry. So the last thing you want is you don't want the mushroom to get contaminated in the jar. So that's why you got to make sure they're cracker dry. That way nothing else will eat them up. But yeah, that's pretty much it. That's the entire growing process from start to finish. There's a lot to do. It takes some time, 30 to 45 days. You can have all this done and you can have your very own happy mushrooms. However, we do have a challenge that we're putting on where you can join and be a part of a community and talk with other people that are trying to do the same thing. If you go to curedandmushrooms.com, you can find out more about that there. And, you know, moving forward throughout this podcast, that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be sharing more real world examples, talking about more questions that you can come up with along the way during this journey. How do you deal with contamination when you see contamination? What do you do if you do get a stalled bag? What do you do if your sports ranch is contaminated? There's a lot of things that can come up along the way. So we're going to be covering those. So make sure you like and subscribe for this podcast and stay tuned for these next episodes that are going to be coming out, where we're going to continue to provide more information and in the growing process. And then don't forget about our other episodes. Season 2, we talked about everything you're going to need to know, you know, after you use your mushrooms. Like, really getting the mushrooms is really like the first part of this journey for you. Once you have the experience, that's like the beginning, not the end. That's going to start you now on this whole new journey in this whole new world, really, because it's what's going to feel like, than you've ever known before. And just know that we're there for you. This podcast is there for you. We have communities there for you. And we call that integration. So once you get to integration point, we're going to have resources available for you. And then also, we have an advanced growers course. So if you feel like, dude, I want to take this to the next level. This was fun. I got my first growth. I'm ready to go more. I want to clone. I want to work with genetics. I want to do all these crazy stuff. I want to do monotubes and all these things. We have an advanced growers course that you can have access to. So again, reach out to us at curedandmushrooms.com for any more information if you'd like to take this further. But other than that, I'll see you guys in the next episode where we talk about some of the more challenging things that can come up during this process. So I'll see you guys there. Much love. Enjoy your mushrooms.